And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're going to spend the next hour talking about flowers, plants, gardens, landscaping, trees, pests, more. Your questions and your comments are welcome for the monthly gardening show. So give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org. If you've got questions or comments, or if you want to celebrate something you tried this year that worked out or didn't work out. So our experts are standing by. We have with us today Campbell County Cooperative Extension Agent of Horticulture, Sarah Stoles. She's on Zoom with us. Sarah, welcome back to our show.
Hey, good to be here.
And Boone County Cooperative Extension Agent of Horticulture, David Kester. David, welcome to the show.
Good day. Thank you.
Both joining us by Zoom today. Again, 513-419-7100 or talk@wvxu.org. We can't wait to talk to you for the next hour about gardening. So let's get started with what we usually start with. We look at the calendar and we see where we are and maybe discuss in general people who have green thumbs. What should they be doing about right now? Sarah, it's September 30th, so we start October tomorrow. What should be on people's minds as they look out their windows forlornly?
Well, what I've been doing at the office and here at my house is transitioning my tropical plants indoors. And we have a lot of tropical plants in our landscape at our education gardens, like elephant ears and a few other ferns, some of the tropical ferns that we will plant, that we plant in the landscape, but then we have to dig them out, put them in containers, and then keep them indoors alive throughout the winter. And then, of course, the house plants that we put out in our landscape and or on the steps, porch, you know, wherever we put those in outdoors, we want to transition those and acclimate those back into our home for the winter. So just a few key points, just kind of examine those, look for any pests. You may have to kind of keep the container in balance and maybe prune off some any large foliage sections. Make sure you have a saucer so when you are watering, the water collects. You want to hold back on any fertilization. You may need to you may need to cut off any buds that may, flower buds that is, that may try to open up in the winter, like tropical hibiscus is really common. You want to try to reduce any or eliminate any flowering throughout the winter. But yeah, those are some things. And David, what do you think?
Well, David, this is, October, I guess, in our part of the world, it does tend to represent the end of the main gardening season. So what do we do?
Well, you can start, you know, keep up with the harvest. There should be quite a few vegetables still out there needing to be harvested. And it's a good idea to get those out of the garden. You can start to clean up your garden, any kind of foliage and things that are need to be cut back and compost. It's a great time to be, if you've gotten through the season, really good time to start amending that soil a little bit, putting some cover crops down and adding leaves over the top or composting leaves. They're going to start coming down. Great time to improve your soil. I think this is a good time. And boy, you know, this kind of weather, I just really start carrying a spade around with me in my truck because I want to be planting. And I think this time of year is just an excellent time to be adding some things to your landscape or making some changes. And it's a good time to plant trees and shrubs.
All right. So we're also thinking about one particular type of thing that grows in the ground, and that's pumpkins. And I know I bring these up fairly often on this program because fall is the best season and pumpkins are a great symbol of that. And everyone's drinking pumpkin spice right now. So I figure we can either talk about pumpkins or sweaters. I would vote for sweaters, but that wouldn't thematically fit in what we're talking about today. So let's talk about pumpkins because people might be heading out and looking for pumpkins for a variety of reasons. So let's talk about the best pumpkins to pick from the patch for decoration and then the ones that we might want to eat. And Sarah, if I wanted to find the perfect pumpkin to carve, what type of qualities am I looking for?
Well, keep in mind that if you're going to grow them yourselves, you want to make sure you find ones that will fit your landscape. You have your small varieties like your minis, and then you have the large jumbo Cinderella varieties, for example. And also, depending upon which one you get, it's days to harvest. So usually it takes about 90 days from when you plant that seed to when you harvest. So some are actually a little bit longer. So just keep that in mind. I really can't plant them here in my landscape because the deer like them. But we have planted some in the past at our education gardens, and they do well. So, you know, I really like the small little pumpkins. You can find the warty pumpkins. Those are really awesome. They really do look like they have warts all over them. I purchase some locally, and I actually incorporate those into my fall decorations and our containers. And I also love gourds. You may have heard me before talk about gourds, which too is a fall harvest, and you can do art with those as well, dry them. So yeah, there's all kinds of pumpkins. If you look through a catalog, you could probably see probably at least, I don't know, 8 to 10 pages full of different pumpkins and gourds.
Well, pumpkins aren't all created equal, David. So what's the consistency? What's the physicality of a pumpkin that's right for carving this time of year?
Well, you want the jack-o'-lantern type. And Michael, I quite honestly, you've got to find the biggest pumpkin you can handle.
I agree.
And then go up a size from there. and then you can also buy two or three of them so that, you know, everybody in the family should have their own pumpkin to carve. And what you want is to select a pumpkin that is a bright orange in color. It should have a handle, a good size handle. And that handle should be cut off from the vine. And the longer the handle on it, the better. And you do not want to pick up the pumpkin or handle it by the handle because they break off very easily. And that's where rotting can take place at the top of the pumpkin. So make sure you carry it from the bottom, put it in place, and then really carving it probably closer to Halloween is a good idea because they will start to deteriorate pretty quickly after you open them up and you carve them. But closer to Halloween, carve them and just enjoy them. And again, I absolutely love cleaning out pumpkins. I like to put my hands in there, do it by, and I love the smell of it and everything else. I just think it's a great activity.
My goodness, what a visual. And so is there any way to like prolong their lives? I know you're saying that you want to carve them closer to Halloween because you don't get a long life out of them, but are there any tricks to maybe preserving them for a week or so extra?
I keeping them cool, that obviously helps. I've heard of some people who will wipe them off with a very light bleach solution, but that can kind of take the skin away. So I would be careful. I think just, finding a good pumpkin selecting one that doesn't have any kind of mold on it or rotting places on it, anything that is on the pumpkin, on the exterior of it is just going to continue to mold and rot into the interior. So finding just a good pumpkin from the start is a good way to prolong it.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation. And we're starting to get some emails now at talk@wvxu.org. So feel free to send your comments and your questions. So Sarah, those are some tips on pumpkins to pick out for carving. What about the ones for eating? What are we looking for?
Well, we definitely want what we call the meat of the pumpkin. So like the pie pumpkins. And speaking of eating, one of my favorite childhood memories is, I love too, David, taking your hands and getting out all that meat of the pumpkin or the gunk and then roasting the seeds. I love that so very much. And I don't know if it's just my imagination, but I feel like the seed amount in pumpkins these days are getting smaller and there's not as much. So I like to buy the pie pumpkins that have more of that meat. You also can eat them. I like to actually slice them and I will grill them, put a little olive oil and cinnamon, and, eat them. Because, you know, yes, you can use them as decoration, but also remember that this is what our Native Americans would use and eat from, because it can be stored for long periods of time. So, David, I'm not sure off the top of my head, I don't have the catalog in front of me, the variety that is best for, you know, the meat. Do you have that? Do you know that?
There's a lot of pie pumpkins is what they're called.
Yeah.
And any of those, they're a little bit smaller and they have a really thick rind to them. And those are just super. And Sarah, there's another one out that is actually does not, it forms a seed, but it doesn't have a seed coat on it. So you don't even have to, you know, you can roast them without without that seed coat on it. But of course, having the seed coat on them, you get to spit that out, which is always a great activity.
Oh, I just eat it whole, David. I just put, no, that's too much wasting going on there. But I also will mention too, I love the white pumpkins. And, you know, you can find different things, stickers or other ornaments that you can use painting them. You know, we've done that before, paint them first and then later on then go ahead and carving them. But really cool, just different colors of pumpkins and gourds that are out.
Okay, and 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you've got some advice or some tips about pumpkins as we start our patch shopping this Halloween and autumn season, either for decorations, for carving, or for eating. 513-419-7150. I'm going to be selfish and ask some questions about houseplants. I know we joke a lot about how clueless I am when it comes to gardens and that sort of thing, but I have for a long time had one solitary houseplant that is a little bit closer to death every time we do this program. And I recently acquired a second plant. I sent y'all a picture of it, and I would like some diagnosis on the first plant, the taller one. So I bought a money tree at one of those large grocery stores in town because I liked what it was called, and I thought I needed some green in the space, and it would make me think about, you know, being financially responsible, right? And it was lovely. But now, you know, it had all these leaves that sprouted from it, like dollar bills, and much like my financial responsibility, those dollar bills sort of flew away. So it's left with like a little tiny bob left. And David, I'm wondering, is there any hope for this money tree's survival, or should I end it all mercifully?
Well, Michael, I did look at the plant, the pictures that you sent me. And the first thing I would recommend is that you continue to contribute to your 401k. No way that's going to produce any kind of fruitful harvest for you in the future. Now, it looks pretty bad. It's a light green in color. And I think if anything, it needs a little more sunlight than it's getting. I think a good window. And I doubt that I'd probably put any fertilizer on it now. But I think a window, a better window, more light would help it immensely.
Well, see, I had it by a window, and this is the trouble with someone who doesn't know about plants. I know there are some very intimate details about plants on how much sunlight they should get. I had it in a window, and it cooked its leaves off. It was, you know, so like I directly faced the sun, and the sun heats up my little apartment, and the plant wasn't had. That's how the weeping pussy willow died. I did buy a sibling with this money tree, and then the other one didn't make it. So, what are you supposed to do with your house plants in determining that light? Can you experiment, or if you get it wrong, do you just go downhill too quickly?
You know, I would try to move it around and see if you can't find a place that's obviously has a little bit less light than that window, but a little bit more than the middle of the room. So just kind of experiment. And, you know, I got to be honest with you. The best thing sometimes you can do is to just get a bag, put it in there and put it out with the trash.
My goodness. That's so sad. I mean, I don't know if I have the heart to do it.
No, I can give it a little plant CPR.
Please.
Okay, help us out here.
Well, maybe you want to make sure that it has dampened sunlight, and you know, if you have blinds or something like that, that would be helpful. But I also recommend turning your plant every so often, so not one side of the plant is absorbing all that sunlight. You may have to like the money plant you have and some other foliage plants, they like dampened sunlight. So, you know, that direct sunlight, you may think about using some more of like succulents or cacti, something that is from, you know, the desert heat, like Arizona or things like that. But also a lot of times when we purchase plants, I mean, I'm guilty of this too. I see a plant, I'm like, oh, I need to have that. But I fail to look at the container that it's in. And so making sure that it always has drainage holes. So if it doesn't, you can easily, drill a hole in it yourself. Or maybe you have to repot it into a container that has drainage holes. Cause a lot of times plants will get root rot fairly easily. That is one thing I would probably do, Michael, is maybe take the container the plant out of the container and smell the roots. If it smells decayed, and I mean, that might be part of the problem. If you see any gnats that have been flying around, that could be a sign that it's holding too much moisture. So a lot of times, a lot of our plants die because they've been overwatered.
See, and I learned that too. Okay, well, I'm going to pay more attention, but what I think I'll do is I will throw that plant away and never, ever own a plant again. You can call 513-419-7100 to join our conversation or email talk at wvxu.org. Let's get to some of your questions now. We got an email from Rebecca. She says, hello, I planted 3 dwarf encore azaleas last October. They were blooming when I planted them, and they bloomed this past spring. They have grown over the summer. However, all 3 of them have lost nearly half of their new growth leaves and have not bloomed again since the spring. They should have bloomed over the summer and again now in the fall. Instead, they look like they're dying. What is going on with them and how do I rescue them? David or Sarah, can you help out Rebecca with these dwarf encore azaleas?
Sarah, is encore that ever blooming that blooms throughout the season?
That might be part of the series. We do have some of those at the extension office. And what we have found, they need a lot of sun and protection. So we've had ours, David, they're in our courtyard, so they're not visible by the general public. And we were testing that because we were told the nursery that we purchased them from that they wouldn't survive in our winters and with the winds that we have. So in this area that we have them, it's near the brick, they're protected from all the wind. And yes, they bloom about 3 times, a lot of mainly twice a year. And when I hear about the foliage defoliating, or excuse me, the green leaves, it could be that they didn't survive. If you want to kind of pull back some of that branching to see if it completely breaks or there's some elasticity to the branching. But I would like to see pictures. You can email us some pictures and we can help with that. But that's what I'm first thinking.
The one thing too is azaleas are, they like an acidic soil, and it's an ericaceous plant. And you've got to, if the nursery didn't tell you exactly how to plant that one, that is something that you need. They need a lot of organic matter in the soil. They need an acidic soil. Sulfur can be used to lower the pH. If they didn't tell you that, and you put them in our usual clay soil, I think that could be a really key. But of course, we have azalea lace bugs. We have spider mites that can get on them as well, and they can do some damage to the foliage. So pictures would really help. And then also, I don't know where you are, but a soil sample from that area, and we could tell you how much sulfur or to apply.
So Rebecca, look up the Boone County Extension Office or the Campbell County Extension Office. You'll find Sarah and David there, and send them some information, maybe a picture, and you'll get a further diagnosis. Thank you for listening, and thank you so much for submitting your question. We've got an email from Lauren. She says, I have a question about improving my grass this fall. I'm a new homeowner with a huge oak tree in the backyard that causes a lot of shade. Currently, the yard is full of clover and weeds, which result in bare spots over the winter and a really poor-looking yard in the spring and summer. I want to improve my lawn, and no fall is the best time to do it. I really don't know where to start and think the shade from the oak tree is going to be challenging for growing strong grass. Would it be best for me to utilize a service, or is this something I can easily do on my own?
First of all, grass is related to corn. It needs full sun. And yes, there are some that do better. Fine leaf tall fescue does better in the shade than probably anything else that we have. But again, it likes sun. under an oak tree, I really recommend people don't even try. Just go ahead and eliminate the grass and eliminate that. Mulch it as much as you can. And if you have to have something green under there, go with a ground cover and try to put those in there. But you are right. It is the best time of the year to try to improve your lawn, get that seed down. But again, if it's growing in shade or you're trying to grow it in shade, you're going to have, you know, mixed results at best.
And Lauren, good luck with that. We hope that you are able to get a thicker lawn. And I want to note that Lauren also writes, thanks. I love these gardening shows and wish you did them more than once a month. So thanks to David and Sarah and our other guests that we frequently have on who help make this show smart for people who care about these things. And we've also got a similar question from Pete, who writes, any advice for thickening a lawn under an oak tree that has dropped more acorns this year than usual? The oak is about 25 years old, trunk diameter of about 18 inches, and is healthy. The lawn is fescue and gets a mix of sun and shade through the day and is just kind of thin. Is it the same situation, David?
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly try. Grass seed is not terribly expensive. You can put it down, keep it moist during this time of year. And you know, we have been kind of dry lately. And sometimes when you have new grass seed coming up, that can mean watering once a day just to keep that root system moist and see what you can do. But again, I think the long-term, the best results is just to eliminate the grass, mulch it as far out as you possibly can, and then maybe try incorporating some ground covers in it. Hostas under there, as long as you can plant them without getting into the roots of the oak tree.
Okay, more of your calls and emails coming up. We're going to take the phone calls next, 513-419-7100. Sarah, David, and I will be back with the monthly gardening show here on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. How about a quick sports update? The Reds are in the playoffs and in the Major League Baseball wild card round game one. Right now, it's the middle of the second inning. The Braves are getting ready to come up to bat. So far, no score there between the Reds and the Braves, 0-0. And now on with the monthly gardening show. Your questions and comments are welcome. Call us, 513-419-7100, or email talk at wvxu.org. We're joined today on Zoom by Boone County Cooperative Extension Agent of Horticulture, David Kester. David, welcome.
Thank you.
And Campbell County Cooperative Extension Agent of Horticulture, Sarah Stoll. Sarah, hello.
Welcome.
Again, 513-419-7100 is the number to call. Let's go to the phones now. We have Ned on the line. Hi, Ned. What's your question or comment?
Hi, I have a lot of house plants, and I was planning on putting dormant oil on them all before I bring them in. I wanted some comments, and in particular, I've got a couple of plants that have what I think is the white scale, little powder puff stuff, and if there's something else I should do for those.
All right, Ned, let's place you on hold and see if Sarah or David might be able to help you with that.
Yeah, so it sounds like a few things going on here. Dormant oil, I would not use. First, before transitioning plants indoors, I really like to either take a towel or a combination of really take a hand towel and kind of clean out, especially in those crevices closer to the root system or the canopy of within the canopy of the plant. I also like to give them a nice shower. So either, you know, outside, or I literally put them in my bathtub on a nice, setting, not too harsh. What you probably have is some mealybugs. Yes, there are scale as well. There's soft body scaled and hard body scaled. So either way, if I do a combination of either water and horticulture soap. and that is four plants. I strongly discourage from using any home remedies, mixing, you know, dish soap and water and some other things, because those can actually burn plant tissue. And so the horticulture soaps are scientifically, you know, measured and been experimented, and they're not, and you're less likely to have any phototoxicity or chemical burn on those. So dormant oil is not your thing. But I would just, again, kind of, you know, kind of rub off any of those scales or those mealy bugs with a towel, and then monitor those. And you may then have to refer to a horticulture soap spray.
Ned, does that help answer your question?
Thank you.
All right, Ned, thanks so much for the call. 513-419-7100. Let's go now to Nicole. Hi, Nicole. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I'm just calling regarding about crabgrass. We've tried everything. Weed killer. We planted our whole yard, like stripped it from the soil and replanted seed, but they're still back. So what can I do?
All right, Nicole, we'll place you on hold and see if we can't help you with that. David, I think this is where I get to reference the blowtorch, right? This is a blowtorch situation.
Well, in this case, it may not do you much good. The really good news is as soon as we get some temperatures below 32 degrees, that crabgrass is going to be dead and gone. The live part. The unfortunately, it has gone to seed, and your lawn is infested with millions of crabgrass seed. And so what you've got to do is in the spring, before maybe when, usually we say when the forsythia starts to bloom, You have to get a crabgrass preventer on your lawn. There are some out there that you can do earlier than that, and they have more of a residual effect. But if you wait too long and the crabgrass has already germinated and started to grow, then they're all going to go to seed, and you're going to have that problem. So timing is everything with this product, and make sure that you get it on in the spring of the year before the crabgrass germinates.
Nicole, does that answer your question for you?
Very helpful. We will try that. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening, and thanks so much for the call. 513-419-7100. On the line with us now is Jean. Hi, Jean. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I have a split-leaf philodendron that I received from cuttings from a plant of my mother's. The original plant is older than me, 60 years old, and she passed away, and my sisters and I cut it up and rooted them, so we each have a piece of this plant, and it is not doing well. I've got it in a nice pot in a window that is, let's see, east facing, and I keep losing leaves. They are turning yellow, and I don't know why, and maybe I don't know how to care for it. I don't know if it likes to be more moist, dry, so I'm hoping you have some advice.
All right, Jean, what an interesting story. Thank you for sharing that with us. I'll place you on hold and see if we can't answer that. Sarah, do you think I should handle the houseplant questions?
Go for it, Michael. I'm not going to bet you any money on that one.
Any advice for Jean?
Yeah, so I too have one, and as you know, I was listening to that question, I was looking over at mine for some inspiration. So, a few things. Soil quality is super important. So making sure when we're doing our house plants, we get potting soil. Okay. So there's different types of potting soil. Of course, I would spend the most money on your potting soil, followed by the container. So again, making sure that you have drainage holes and that you have the saucer to collect all that water that leaches through the container. So the biggest downside The biggest reason why, the most common reason why house plants and a lot of landscape plants die is overwatering. So some of the poor quality soil that we may find, it clumps up, it holds in a lot of moisture, and it doesn't drain well. So we want to make sure, again, that it's draining. Sometimes we get cuttings and they're started in water. That some plants do well by putting them directly in water. But when we transition those after roots have formed into soil, for example, we will start to see that. So you're changing the environment, the nutrients as well from water to the soil. And so a lot of times we will see yellowing happening, maybe even some rotting happening. So I always recommend if you are going to put this a house plant and keep it in soil, start it in soil. Exceptions, spider plant, for example, it's kind of a tough cookie. It can tolerate both of those. But that's what I would guess. Also, when you're transplanting or even dividing some of your house plants, you know, we have these luscious, beautiful leaves on them. I would cut all the larger foliage leaves off, and you just really want to focus on those smaller leaves so it can photosynthesize and put all the storage down into the root system. So I hope that helps. Of course, I'm trying to visualize what you spoke about. So send me pictures, and maybe we can discuss further.
Jean, is that helpful?
Okay, I'll do that. Yes, that was very helpful. Thank you. And I will send you pictures.
Awesome. Good luck to you. Thank you for the call. 513-419-7100. We'll get back to those phone calls in just a moment. And we've got a line open for you. We've also got emails coming in at talk@wvxu.org. And Nasrin writes, I have a variety of azalea plants. We do not rake our leaves from our oak trees. I collect all of them and use them as mulch around our azaleas. So far, every spring, we get 100% bloom. Also, during hot summer, I water them every other day. So that seems like just some advice there from Nasrin about how to take care of azaleas. That sound familiar, David? Is that
yes,
a good strategy?
That's the one thing when we talked about growing grass under these oak trees, you've got to remember that these oak trees are all going to be losing their leaves very soon. And so all those leaves are going to have to be raked up or gotten away from there. And you'll be raking over the top of that newly planted grass, and that's going to be an issue. So, but definitely none of these leaves should be going into the trash or anywhere else. They need to be composted. They need to be used as a soil amendment. And oak leaves are just super for azaleas and rhododendrons and things like that, as well as just in the garden.
All right, Nasrin, thank you so much for sending that message in and for listening to us. We got an email from Beth. I have a paisley begonia inherited from a friend, which is the most beautiful plant I've ever seen. Each year, I bring it indoors, and it loses all its leaves and barely limps through to spring. When it goes back outdoors, it fills out and is gorgeous again. What soil and conditions does it prefer? More nitrogen? Should I keep it damp or let it dry out between waterings? I'm doing something wrong, but I can't figure it out. Sarah, can we help Beth with this paisley begonia?
Yeah, those are gorgeous plants, and most people treat them as annuals in the landscape, but I'm guilty too. I take cuttings or I take the whole plant and I bring that indoors. And David, this is really funny. Your old, your previous office in Campbell County is now Terry's Plant Sanctuary. And amongst those plants that are in there are begonias. So it looks beautiful in there. So begonias do, in my experience too, they will defoliate fairly quickly, though they have all those buds down closer to the root system, and you don't want to keep them dry, but you don't want to keep the soil too wet either. Again, overwatering will quickly kill plants. So I would keep it on the drier side. And you may need to, and they like dampled sunlight. So I would, if you need to, you may need to invest in, and if you only have one, I wouldn't worry about it. But if you have multiple or other house plants, maybe you need some artificial lighting. You can buy those at the box store. That's no problem. But really, if you just keep it more on the drier side and kind of, quote, it goes dormant indoors, and once you take it back outside, it should, it's doing fine. But I wouldn't worry too much. Yes, I know you probably want to enjoy the foliage indoors, but in experience, mine have done that too. The one thing that Terry has done is she just keeps that plant as an inside plant all year round. So she doesn't even transition those outside, and they will hold their foliage then throughout the winter.
There you go, Beth. Good luck with that paisley begonia. And I also want to note that Beth adds to our email. Thank you for the monthly gardening show and for Cincinnati Edition. Well, thank you for listening and writing in, Beth. We very much appreciate it. Talk at WVXU.org is the email if you'd like to ask questions that way. Otherwise, you can give us a call at 513-419-7100, just like Susan did. Hi, Susan. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I had a question about nimbleweed because I didn't really notice it until maybe a couple of years ago. Now I seem to be finding it everywhere. And the only way I've been able to try and control it is with a Roundup type of spray, but I didn't know if there's something else. I know regular weed killer doesn't seem...
Oops, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Susan. I interrupted you there. Please continue now. You were talking about if you didn't know if there was another way to proceed with Roundup.
Yeah, because I never seem to notice it. I don't know if the weather, warmer temperatures are bringing it available, you know, to let it grow around here or what, but now I seem to find it everywhere.
Okay, well, let's place you on hold now for real and see if we can't help you with this. Sarah, this is the blowtorch, right?
Yes, sure. I mean, you could practice with your money plant.
See, when Joshua Jones is on, he always encourages the blowtorch.
Oh, I love it. I do love that plant.
Okay, but how do we really deal with nimbleweed?
So I had to remind myself of what this noxious weed is, and it is a warm season perennial grass. So that right there tells us it is a true grass. So, for example, like our broadleaf weed herbicides will not control this this weed. It will control our broadleaf weeds such as dandelions and violets, some of those weeds. But because this is a grass, we will have to use a non-selective herbicide. That's one way. Pulling it is probably not going to be very effective unless it's in your landscape beds, because the root system is pretty heavy duty. It kind of, you know, is almost like a ground cover, if you will. And so pulling it is just going to, you know, it's going to thrive from there. And so kind of if you find it in a certain area, you can maybe even do a black plastic kind of method and the blowtorch maybe, but just know that whatever it touches, it is going to kill it. And then this time of year, so it is going to start going dormant because it is a warm season perennial. It will be killing out, and then you can just split seed or silt seed some of your grass so that it outcompetes that. So I do have experience with this in my landscape beds. I don't see it in my turf yet. So I just hand pull it and it comes up nicely. The non-selective herbicide is effective, but be mindful that it will kill your desirable grass and any other landscaping plants that you have in that area.
Susan, is that helpful for you?
Yeah, sure. Sure enough. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening and taking the time to call in. We've got time for more phone calls at 513-419-7100 and emails at talk@wvxu.org. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Another quick sports update. The Reds are in the playoffs, and I know people are excited about that. It is currently the top of the third in a scoreless game between the Reds and the Braves. The Reds do currently have a runner on first in this best of three series to kick off this weird expanded Major League Baseball playoff season. And now, back to gardening. Your questions, your comments, welcome here at 513-419-7100 or at talk@wvxu.org. We've got our experts with us today, Sarah Stoles from the Campbell County Cooperative Extension. Sarah, thank you for being with us. And from the Boone County Cooperative Extension, we've got David Kester. Hi, David.
Thank you.
Okay, yes. Let's get back to the phone lines now. We've got a few people waiting. Tom is on the line. Hi, Tom. What's your question or comment?
Good afternoon. My question is this. I've got two arborvitae, and they're about 10 feet tall, and they've been doing great the past few years, and they're starting to turn brown on the inside and moving towards the outside, and it's scaring me.
Okay, so Tom, I'm going to place you on hold. David or Sarah, can we help with the arborvitae?
Tom, I would do a couple of things. One, I don't know where you're located, but I would take some pictures of them and get them to Sarah or myself. And I'd also, if you're in northern Kentucky, I would take a sample of the affected area into your extension office. With that, I would also take a kind of a landscape type picture of the area so that we know in case there's any kind of soil condition or something that we can see from that. There's sometimes you just think about an arborvitae, you might be thinking about spider mites or just some dieback that may have a couple of different reasons for happening, but it is really frightening when you see it and you don't want it to continue to spread. So if we can get some samples of that and get it, a diagnostic on it, that'd be the best way to go.
All right, let's see if that worked. Tom, is that good advice for you?
Yeah, drought if I just hadn't watered them enough also.
Well, you know, we certainly went through a period there where they could have used some supplemental watering. That, you know, we really didn't get a whole lot of moisture in September, and it's still not too late to be applying moisture or water irrigation to all of our landscape plants.
All right, Tom, thank you so much for listening and thank you for calling in. Okay, Sarah and David, we are down to the wire with the number of minutes we have left on the program. We've got a line of callers and a couple of emails we still want to get to, which means it is time for the lightning round. So if you are a caller on hold, be sure to make your question as concise and to the point as possible. And David and Sarah will keep our responses as quick and informative as we can. And first up in the lightning round is Patricia. Hi, Patricia. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I purchased a fern plant from a grocery store. Can I now plant those ferns outside?
Okay, Patricia, we'll turn it over to the panel. Sarah and David, can we plant those ferns outside?
You have to really find out whether it's a hardy fern. There are some ferns that'll do fine here overwintering. I doubt that is one of them. I think that's more of a house plant. And you just have to find out if you can get the label from it and do some research and find out whether it's hardy.
Find out if it's hardy there. Okay, Antoinette is up next. Hi, Antoinette. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thank you. I have a couple of non-hardy lavenders in a pot. In pots, and I was wondering if there's any way I can bring them inside over winter and take them back outside in the spring.
All right, Antoinette, can we bring the potted lavender inside over the winter? Thank you. Sarah or David?
Yeah, so a great question. You can, so just follow those recommendations. Now, a lot of all of the lavender likes well-drained soil and a lot of sunlight. So making sure that you put it, you may need to purchase artificial lighting, good drainage, and hold back on the fertilizing. You may want to cut off any of those flowers that you have now and give it a nice haircut. And keep it on the drier side. Don't forget that.
All right. Good luck with that one. Let's go now to Beth. Hi, Beth. What's your question or comment?
Hi, I'd like to know what is the best way of bringing a geranium in doors for the winter?
Thank you for the call, Beth. We'll turn it over to Sarah and David. Geraniums, what's the best way to bring those inside for the winter?
Well, you know, there's several ways. Some people will take all the dirt off the roots. They'll turn them upside down, put them on a hanger in the basement. Quite honestly, what I do is I pot them up and I bring them in. And this is kind of like that begonia. They're not going to look great all winter long, but if you can just get them to survive until spring, and then you can take cuttings from them, you can reroot them, put them in new pots, and they'll be fine. But just getting them through the winter, just in a pot, and they will look bad, but as long as they're alive and living, they're okay.
Ain't that the truth for all of us? Let's go now to Rebecca. Hey, Rebecca, what's your question or comment?
Hi, I planted all new boxwood hedges in my front yard this year, and they had a fungus that basically destroyed them and took over the root system and made them almost disintegrate. It's gone into the rest of my garden, and so I've had to pull out some other bushes as well and some other flowers. I'm wondering how I should treat the ground that these plants were in before winter, or what I should do to kind of prepare for planting something new, if I should plant in the spring, if I should plant now, and what I should do about that.
All right, Rebecca, thank you. I'll place you on hold for a moment. And Sarah or David, you want to take a chance on that one?
I think what's going on there is a blight called boxwood blight, and it does affect the root system of the plant. So we don't see it much around here, but it could potentially. So I would like to see a sample if possible, for sure. Not only just the foliage, but I would like to see the root system of areas that are showing these symptoms, and you know, maybe an area if you still have of that lush green along with the roots. And fungal is a generic term that a lot of people think is happening. That may not be what really is going on. And a lot of the diseases, pathogens that are out there are very host specific. So keep that in mind. So unfortunately, there's not a blanket, if you will, of a spray that will, quote, treat the pathogens that have maybe killed your boxwood. So I wouldn't. Don't think that way. I would, one, first identify what really is going on. It could be simply, I know I keep saying it, but watering is super important. A lot of times these are water molds that are carried and spread by overwatering. So timing of irrigation is very important. Making sure that you focus on those root systems when you are watering, especially a new planting. I mean, I can keep going on and on, but bottom line, let's get a sample. Pictures are great as well. There's not a, quote, blanket treatment, chemical treatment that you can put on your landscape to prevent any further spread of, quote, a pathogen.
Rebecca, I hope that was helpful for you.
Yes, it was. Where do I send a sample?
If you look up the Boone County Extension Office or the Campbell County Extension Office, you'll find Sarah or David, and they will be delighted to help you.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Thank you, Sarah. I appreciate it.
All right, Rebecca. No problem. Thank you so much. So we got through all the calls that we could take. We've got three emails left and about 45 seconds. So Christina from Batesville writes about her herb garden, a brick spiral herb garden. She loves it. And she wants to preserve the lavender, the rosemary, the sage, and the thyme, and the mint from the cold weather. The garden's 6 feet round. She wants the best and least expensive solutions.
Some of those plants are going to make it without any problem, the mint, but some of them, you know, you're going to need to put some mulch on them, and some of them probably should be dug up and brought in. I would get a good herb book and really take a look and just see how hardy the ones are that you can bring in, and those that you can't, you'll just have to replace come spring.
All right.
And you can take what you have, like if you have rosemary or the basil, you can dry them or freeze them. So there are ways to continue enjoying their flavors throughout the winter.
And Tricia and John, your emails, I'm going to forward them to Sarah and David and hope that they will respond to your great questions as well. I'm sorry we didn't get them on air. David Kester and Sarah Stoles, thanks so much for being with us today.
Great to be here.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Go Reds. We'll talk tomorrow.